From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, November 20th, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
Maine today saw a record 90 hospitalizations for COVID-19, and the positivity rate hit nearly 3% as new daily case numbers exceed 200. The head of the state CDC says the exponential growth has put the state at a critical juncture. Patty White has more.
It's been 8 months since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, and a lot has changed. In the beginning, transmission tended to occur in urban areas, at large gatherings, and was frequently connected to focal outbreaks. But now the virus is spreading in rural areas and small household gatherings, and community transmission accounts for a larger share of cases. Just as the course of the pandemic has changed, says Maine CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah, people need to change their behaviors to bend the curve.
If we don't do something different, nothing is going to change. We will stay on this trajectory of increasing cases, which each passing day will make it harder and harder to put a lid on things.
Shah says the CDC is seeing an increasing number of outbreaks in different settings across the state. Testing labs are working beyond capacity, and the agency's ability to do case investigations and contact tracing in a timely manner is strained. Governor Janet Mills implemented new measures this week to limit the spread of the virus. Businesses such as restaurants, social clubs, movie theaters, and casinos must close by 9 p.m. The restriction lasts through December 6th, with the goal of discouraging gatherings for one incubation period. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Because of its rising positivity rate for COVID-19, York County has once again been designated yellow under the state's color-coded risk assessment system to guide schools during the pandemic. That designation signals schools to take extra precautions, like limiting numbers of people in buildings and moving to hybrid learning. Also designated yellow are Androscoggin, Franklin, Washington, and Somerset counties, where case rates continue to rise. All other counties are still green. Starting on Monday, tenants having trouble paying their rent due to hardship caused by COVID-19 can apply for assistance with their December rent. It's a $6.2 million extension of a rent relief program managed by Maine Housing and funded by federal COVID-19 relief money. Grants are made on a first-come, first-served basis and can be used to cover up to $1,000 of a person's October, November, and now December rent as long as funds last. A broad group of health care programs and tax provisions will run out next month unless Congress takes action. As Mal Leary reports, many will have a big impact in Maine if they are allowed to expire.
Separate from the federal budget that runs out December 11th are a range of programs that were created to address the pandemic crisis. Maine Congresswoman Shelley Pingree says many are health-related.
So many of them are critical health care extenders, as they call them, community health centers, special diabetes programs.
Several provisions of Medicare and Medicaid are set to run out, as is a temporary pandemic unemployment program. And Maine Senator Susan Collins says her measure that increased the income tax medical deduction will also come to an end unless Congress takes action to extend it. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Governor Janet Mills today announced an ambitious state-led effort to build as many as 12 floating wind energy turbines off Maine's coast. She's on the hunt for a location for the array in partnership with the University of Maine and the big money investors behind the pioneering Aquaventist turbine experiment near Monhegan Island. But as Fred Bever reports, that's got some fishermen worried.
The effort to win a so-called research lease from the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management will be led by Dan Burgess, director of the governor's energy office.
You know, the opportunity to work with these developers utilizing the Maine-made, Maine-developed floating technology is just a really significant opportunity for the state and, and for us to continue to take a national and even global leadership position on floating offshore wind.
The Mills administration is pitching the project as small scale, needing only 16 square miles of ocean as compared to lease areas 10 times as large for wind projects off southern New England. Still, with as many as 12 turbines running at a capacity of 10 megawatts each, Burgess says they could provide enough energy for 70,000 to 100,000 homes. The site would be located between 20 to 40 miles offshore in the Gulf of Maine, he says, beyond the horizon line. And he adds the platforms would float in water somewhere between 50 and 200 meters deep. That's a contrast with the more traditional fixed platform wind technologies, which require much shallower waters.
There's seven turbines in the water right now in the country, five off Rhode Island and two in Virginia. There's many, many hundreds to thousands of megawatts in the pipeline up and down the East Coast and on the West Coast. But this is really the first of its kind from a floating perspective in the country.
Burgess was reluctant to describe the project's value, whether in terms of its potential construction costs, energy profits, or jobs created. But a single turbine prototype to be deployed off Monhegan Island by New England Aqua Ventus is expected to create more than $125 million in economic activity and hundreds of jobs during the construction period. Aqua Ventus is a consortium that now includes the University of Maine's Engineering Department and the Mitsubishi Corporation. Jeremy Payne, executive director of the Maine Renewable Energy Association, says Maine's opportunity for offshore wind developments has seemed to be just around the corner for at least a decade.
And this feels like a really meaningful step toward significant progress and the potential for something economically transformative for the state. And given where we are in terms of a global recession, it could not have come at a better time.
That doesn't mean an instant proliferation of turbines in the Gulf, he adds. It will mean a wealth of new information, not just about how the turbines perform.
But how their performance is impacted by one another, how their performance is impacted by the current, and then ultimately, what happens underneath the water. You know, it's pretty easy for us to sort of measure how much electricity are you generating, and then are you able to put onto the grid. What's less certain is ultimately what is the marine life impact.
And those marine effects have many in the state's fishing communities deeply worried.
I feel very anxious about this. I feel very unsettled about this. An offshore wind lease is a minimal 30-year commitment. It's a legacy for the fishing industry that cannot be undone.
Patrice McCarron is executive director of the Maine Lobstermen's Association.
That region is extremely important for Maine's lobster fishery, our groundfish industry. We have emerging fisheries as climate changes and species shift up from the mid-Atlantic and the South Atlantic. So it's important today, and it's going to be extremely important in the future.
The Mills administration is promising a robust stakeholder process as it decides on a lease site, with leadership from the Commissioner of Marine Resources, Patrick Kelleher. McCarron says fishermen might have more confidence if the proposal had come from an existing multi-state task force, which she says would do a better job of choosing wind energy sites that consider the entire set of Gulf of Maine ecosystems. The state's move, she says, could open the floodgates for independent bid proposers instead of waiting for the task force and the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management to lead the bidding process. One member of that task force, though, is pretty pleased. James Gilway, town manager in Searsport, whose deep water port, served by a rail line, is a likely site for staging construction and deployment of the turbines.
I'm glad that we stayed on the radar and that we're moving forward now, because our energy independence and creating green energy is important. It should be important to everyone.
Administration officials have told stakeholders they expect to choose a site in early 2021. Burgess says floating turbines could be generating electricity there within 5 years. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And live harness racing at Scarborough Downs will come to an end 1 week from tomorrow on November 28th. It'll also mark the end of an era. The track first opened in 1950, and according to the industry publication Harness Link, it regularly packed thousands into its stands for nightly races in the 70s and 80s, with a record 9,133 in June of 1980 for a Lou Ferrigno autograph signing. But things changed over the years, says Mike Sweeney. He's worked at Scarborough Downs for decades and currently serves as the race announcer and publicist. He says COVID-19's made things difficult over the last several months, but the track has struggled for years, especially since the Oxford Casino opened in 2012. He says as more options for entertainment and gambling have broadened, attendance has declined.
You know, I started working here in 1981, and I was putting myself through college selling tickets. And back then, if you wanted to gamble, you either went to a racetrack or you went to Las Vegas. Those were the two options. And then lotteries came in, so people could buy lottery tickets at their corner stores. I can remember when I first came here, neighbors and people that I worked at other jobs would send $2 daily double wagers out to the track with me. And that's how people would do their casual gaming. And that all changed. You know, now there's online gaming. There are casinos in easy access to people in the state of Maine. And there are other entertainment options too. When I first started working here, there were no organized sports in the state. Now you have the Sea Dogs, you have the Mariners. Back in the early 80s, you might get to see one Red Sox game on TV during the course of a week, and now every single game is televised. So there are so many different options for people to get their entertainment right now. And harness racing stayed the same, but those options that the people had just got bigger and more varied. And I think that was the major impact as to why harness racing has lost some of its popularity.
Is there still sort of a core group of people who love harness racing as much as ever?
Oh, absolutely. There are people here in the state of Maine who I've seen at the track since I was a kid. We've all grown up together. We all look at each other and say, geez, how did we get this old? But and on the big days when the Kentucky Derby is being held, we get huge crowds out here. We throw a great big party. People get dressed up. We have buffets and mint juleps and it's a big celebration. There still is interest in horse racing, but the days of people coming out to the track, you know, two or three times a week, those are just long gone.
So what is in the future now for Scarborough Downs?
Well, here at Scarborough Downs, we're going to be ceasing the live operation on the 28th of November. That's a week from Saturday, 12:15 post time. So if anybody wants to come to the races one final time, that would be the day to do it. We were just granted an off-track betting license by the Maine Harness Racing Commission today. And that license will carry us forward into 2021. Where people can come to the facility, they can watch and wager on harness and thoroughbred racing from around the country right here at the Downs. So going forward, that will be the main avenue of business for Scarborough Downs.
Is there anything else you want to say to people?
It's going to be a very melancholy day for us here at the track. We're struggling as we head towards the end. It's the people who work at this racetrack have been here for a long time, and we're like family, and we love what we do. If we didn't love what we do, we definitely wouldn't be here, because we're not here for the money. It's gonna be a sad day when we turn the lights out for the last time. I never wanted to be that person, but unfortunately, I'm gonna be one of the people. Bringing the curtain down for the last time on the 28th, and I'm sure there'll be a few tears shed.
All right, Mike Sweeney, thank you so much for talking with me.
You're welcome.
That's Mike Sweeney, publicist and track announcer for Scarborough Downs, which will hold its last live harness racing event next Saturday, November 28th. And that's today's Maine News. You can find more online at mainepublic.org. Have a good weekend. I'm Nora Flaherty.